The Thundering Herd with Colin Cowherd podcast is presented by Vizio, America's number one HD TV company. We're revolutionizing how you watch, listen, and live. At Vizio, we find a better way and make it for everyone.
This is the Thundering Herd on ESPNRadio.com. Now,
who's Coos, Gunga Dan, living the is?
The Thundering Herd with Colin Cowherd.
It's incredible.
On ESPNRadio.com.
It's Colin's Sizzling 7 in the Herd.
All right, here we go. Fisher Ruski just handed me his notes for his Sizzling 7. The Washington Redskins plus 9.5 at the Atlanta Falcons. Fish says Washington's 1-5-2 against the spread in its last 8. Dan Snyder has a bingo caller running his offense. You can have the points. I'll take Matty Ice at home. Fish says, take the Atlanta Falcons minus 9.5. Packers minus 10 at Tampa. Fish likes Green Bay. Coming off an emotional loss, heads to Tampa, home of the 1-6 against the spread powerhouse. That's 2-8 outside the division. Says Fish, I don't even know who Tampa's quarterback is, and I don't care. Green Bay wins by 21. He likes the Packers minus 10.
Chalk it up.
That's hot.
Chargers plus 5 at the Giants. He likes San Diego. Says Fish, tough to bet against New York. I'm not one of those going on a feeling guys, but Eli's foot is hurt. He's in a slump, and I think LT is going to run wild at the Meadowlands. Plus, I need to take one dog. 5 points is enough to convince me to take the Bolts. Going to run some Wildcat plays this weekend. Love the Bolts plus 5 against the
Giants.
Take
it. Chalk it up.
Dallas plus 3 at Philadelphia. Fish says, I know Philadelphia's won 2 straight. Dallas has won 3 straight. Philadelphia's tough team to beat at home. Dallas, though, is 9-1 in November in their last 10 games. However, says Fish, Westbrook is playing for Philly. Roy Williams still fighting with Tony Romo. And Wade Phillips looks more confused than a Playboy playmate on Jeopardy. I'm taking Andy Reid, Donovan McNabb, and the Birds at home. Fish says take Philadelphia minus 3.
Take the Eagles.
Here we go with his college picks. Virginia at Miami, the Canes minus 13.5. Fish says I'll give those cheese-munching, Chardonnay-drinking yuppies the points. I get the players and the horses from the U at home. Virginia, says Fish, lost to Duke. Miami scored 2 touchdowns in the 4th. Beat Wake Forest at Grove Stadium in Week 9. I'm going with the U minus 13.5.
That's hot.
Duke at North Carolina. North Carolina minus 10. Duke, Fish likes another big college favorite. What is this, says Fish? College hoops? Carolina's having its best season in a decade. I didn't even know Duke had a football team.
Who knew?
The Blue Devils don't have Coach K, and they don't have a shot here. Fish likes both Miami minus 13.5 and Carolina minus 10. And finally, Fish likes Penn State, not Ohio State.
I like Penn State to win and cover.
I'll take Joe Pa. You can have Terrell Pryor. In fact, Richard Pryor is better. I'm going with the Nittany Lions. There is my Sizzling 7. I disagree with Fish on the last one. He is taking the Falcons, the Packers, the Chargers, the Eagles, the Miami Hurricanes, the North Carolina Tar Heels, and the Penn State Nittany Lions, who are hosting Ohio State at 3:30. If anybody wants to know, the weather is supposed to be pretty good tomorrow. 45, 50 degrees, 3:30 in the afternoon, and clear skies. So weather is not going to be an issue. I see it as an under. Take Ohio State. You like Penn State.
And traditionally, in all Big Ten matchups, bet the under. It's very slow football. As a matter of fact, they yelled at us for driving up here to a Big Ten school too fast. So take the under.
All right, there's Fish's Sizzling 7, who I am giving to. He was 4-3 last week. I'll give it to him. Until he has a losing week, then it's back to being my property. So Fish gets it this week. It is interesting. I think the game to keep your eye on is Oregon and Stanford. College fans tend to forget this, is that you're dealing with 18- and 19-year-old kids. And almost always, no matter how good the coach is, like Urban Meyer or Pete Carroll, you find a college team the week after their biggest win of the year, and they almost always become much less of a football team. So that's just the way it works, especially when it's a win. So Florida beats LSU, emotional win. Tim Tebow's got a concussion. The next week they come home and get totally outplayed by Arkansas. USC beats Ohio State and Columbus. Next week goes to Seattle and gets totally outplayed by Washington. So Oregon, biggest win for Oregon. Last time Oregon had that big of a win, they beat Michigan, Lloyd Carr in Michigan. The next week they were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. The following week they hosted Washington State at home and lost by 40. So you're dealing with 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, and my gut feeling is, now it may be different for Oregon. They run that crazy aggressive offense, and I don't like Stanford's speed at linebacker and defensively up front. So I think Oregon matches up well. But, you know, it's not about talent. It's about emotion. And even the best coaches in this country, the Joe Paws and the Tressels and the Carrolls and the Mac Browns and the Urban Meyers and Nick Sabans, you know, you can't convince 85, 19-year-old kids to play as hard after their biggest emotional win of the week. And don't forget, here's what happens. These college kids are on campus, and everybody tells them all week, you the man, you're the greatest guy in the world, and their girlfriends love them, and their buddies love them, and everybody loves them. And all of a sudden the next week they come out and they're just not the same football team. So Oregon football players all week, man, you are the king of the Pac-10. You're unbelievable. And conversely, all those Stanford kids are hearing, oh, my God, you see how good Oregon is? Oh, Stanford, you better play. Oh, my God, are you guys going to get killed in that game? So, you know, the fans in college, on campus, to some degree dictate tempo and emotions for that college football team. Whoa, I'll tell you this. You know, this is our last visit to a college football place. We've come here two or three times, and we always get great crowds here. It is really, and, you know, for a lot of people around the country that listen to this show, especially with the economy, you can't travel a lot. I would highly recommend for a guy living in San Diego and for a guy living in Texas, if you ever can get to a football game here, it's really unbelievable. 106,000 people all wearing white. This campus, I'm a West Coast guy. When I first got to this campus, I just couldn't believe it. You could put two or three major airports on the land you have here. It's beautiful. The stadium's gorgeous. The facilities are kind of a combination of classic architecture, pre-war, post-war, some very progressive. Architecturally, it's kind of fascinating. Yet, it's all right next to cows. And it's really an amazing place. And I didn't know anything about Penn State. You know, when you grow up out west, you just think Pennsylvania is like really angry Philadelphia Eagle fans and then people in carriages. I mean, like, that's it. You don't really understand it. But it is a huge state. This is a stunningly enormous and beautiful campus. And what is striking is when you go around, and these are, you know, college kids, there's not a college campus in the country I go to, and I'm dead serious. Fish and I, it's remarkable. What these kids major in, it's all bio this and engineering that and pre-law. I mean, this is really one of America's, like, brain centers. And we've joked about it during the breaks, but kids are up early, kids are attentive, kids are majoring, focused, laptops. College campuses today are an amazing place. Speaking of amazing, I saw this quote yesterday. Even though I've lived in places where there's some bad people, I've met very few bad guys. John Riggins, great football player, Redskins, quoted this week talking about the Redskins owner, Daniel Snyder. This is pretty harsh. This is a bad guy that owns the team. Bad guy. And if the commissioner is worried about potential new owners and saying some of these guys shouldn't apply, he might want to police his own inside guys. Now, Snyder has been under fire by many stakeholders around the NFL, but acknowledged on Tuesday, he's embarrassed about his team. It's all driven by ego. Everything comes from here. Said John Riggins about Dan Snyder. Chris Collinsworth on Showtime pressed John Riggins. Pressed him. He said, what do you mean he's a bad guy and not just a bad owner? And John Riggins said, let me put it to you this way, Chris. This person's heart is very dark. Yikes. I will say this about owners, is that rich people are often brilliant, and much like the rest of us, some are highly functional, moderately functional, highly dysfunctional. And my theory has always been, or my opinion, is that the more dysfunctional, you should probably own from a distance. Robert Kraft is very functional. He should own close. Jerry Jones is more dysfunctional. He should own a little further away. When you get into trouble is when the guys who should be owning from further away get close. If you can win with a dysfunctional owner, if he's a far away, you can win with a functional owner when he's close. But when you have dysfunctional close like Jerry Jones, that's when you have your problems. And the sense I get from Dan Snyder is that he's an owner that should own from a distance, but instead is on the playground with all the kids. And you should probably have a fence between the players and Snyder, and there is not one. Okay, I said I have never in my life eaten at Arby's, nothing against Arby's, great place, and I've never eaten at Chick-fil-A. And so I bought Joey, if you're watching ESPNU, I just bought Joey a student. I just bought him a sandwich, and he went and brought me one. And so I am going to do something I've never done before. I am going to break tradition and have a bite of a delicious Chick-fil-A sandwich. And if you're on ESPNU, this is almost it's almost historic.
Yeah, you're not a fast food guy, so this is pretty amazing that you're going to do this.
All right, here we go. All right, here we go.
Tackle that thing, Herd. Tackle it.
Here we go.
Oh, geez, you got stuff all over your over the mic.
That's pretty good.
That's tasty, isn't it?
That was fantastic.
When I lived down south in Delaware, we used to eat that stuff all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Down south in Delaware.
Oh, Delaware's the south. You know that.
Well, I have two proclamations. Chick-fil-A is really good, and Penn State beats the Buckeyes tomorrow. Listen, you people are just too close to me to say the opposite. I've got to be honest with you.
There's a lot more of them than you, brother.
There is. Whoa! Well, he's your pal and my pal. He's Sal Pal, Sal Pal Antonio, joining us. He does the matchup show, 7:30 Eastern, Sunday mornings, which if you really like the intellectual aspects of football, they break down film, and I find it, as a football junkie, a zealot, really good television. You're doing the Dallas-Philadelphia game on Sunday night. From what you see, Sal, should we be impressed with the Cowboys, or are they going to now meet their fate as they upgrade the opponent, Philadelphia?
I think both are true. I think we should be impressed with the Cowboys. We certainly should be impressed with the way Tony Romo has turned around his season. That's for sure. All the numbers are pointing in the right direction. No interceptions for the longest period in his career thus far. He has finally found a true number one wide receiver, a guy that he can trust. And when you have a tight end like Jason Witten, and we talk about this on the matchup show, by the way, that's the first time anybody referred to Merrill Hodge as intellectual, I want you to know. And now there'll be no living with him. But what we do on the matchup show is try to show the schematics of the game of football. And when you're playing offense, especially in the NFC East, you have to be able to control the field between the hashes. And that's what the Cowboys have always been able to do with Jason Witten. and Marion Barber. The problem is they haven't been able to take advantage of it on the outside because Romo has really not had a guy that he could trust, notwithstanding Terrell Owens, at the wide receiver position in the last two seasons. And now he's got one in Miles Austin, and I think it really has improved his game, his level of trust in everybody on the field. He trusts what he sees. But here's the problem. You go back to that 44-6 beatdown in Philly last year at the end of the season with the division on the line. And you look at it, again, you look at the schematics, and what do the Eagles do very good? They break down your protection. That is what Jim Johnson bequeathed to Sean McDermott. That is the calling card of the Eagles offense for the last 11 seasons. They will break your protection down, and they will blitz you, or, Colin, they will create the illusion of a blitz. And one of the things that we break down on the matchup show, Jaws does it a great job this week, is showing exactly what Romo sees and what he thinks he sees and why it gave him so many problems at the end of the year last year when they lost 44-6 and Romo failed to engineer a touchdown drive against the Eagles.
All right, you also, San Diego's at the New York Giants. It is a huge game for the Giants, who are on a three-game skid. You notice something that you will show on the show with Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers. What is it?
I'm not going to give it away, but it's really, really cool. Merrill Hodge, working with one of our interns on the show, broke down every one of Philip Rivers' snaps this season and shows that Philip Rivers is telegraphing the plays of the Chargers. Now, we were shocked that North Turner and the Chargers have not self-scouted Rivers enough to make him stop. But when you see it, you will be blown away. It's the reason why teams know exactly when the ball is going to be snapped, and we reveal it on the show. It's really cool. Merrill Hodge does one of his clicker breakdowns, and it's really cool. And it's probably going to help the Giants' defense, you know, unless the Chargers are watching the matchup show there at the Sheridan Meadowlands before the game, before they go over to Giants Stadium, and they say, you know what, we got to fix this. Because Giants given up 115 points the last three games. The Giants' defense is all screwed up for a lot of different reasons. We also show that on the show. But, I mean, we saw it last week when they came to the link. They really miss Kenny Phillips. They really, really miss Aaron Ross. They can't cover in the secondary. And dare I say it, I think Antonio Pierce has lost a serious step. He can't keep up with anybody. He's slow to fill in a hole. And their tackling is poor defensively. I don't think they trust the new defensive coordinator, Bill Sheridan. They've got real defensive problems. But what we show them on the show may help them.
Okay, Ravens and Bengals. I tend to lean Ravens in this game. Sal Powell joining us, The Herd on ESPN Radio via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. I tend to, the veteran defense, big spot. Ravens' schedule gets tough. They've really got to show up some urgency. I like the Ravens. What are you seeing in this game with the Bengals?
Well, they made a big change on defense last week against the Broncos. A big change. They went more to zone defense in their secondary because they realized, hey, we don't have the horses to cover people man-to-man. You know, they got beat by Andre Caldwell, that Carson Palmer to Andre Caldwell touchdown pass with 22 seconds left. They got beat by the old man, Brett Favre, at the Dome the week later when he hit up with Sidney Rice to set up the game-winning field goal. So they had to go to zone, and they're playing a lot more blitz in front of it. As a result, especially on first down, they're trying to dictate on defense what an offense will do because they were tired of getting dictated to. And I agree with you. I think Ray Lewis, he's one guy that, you know, he knows, hey, listen, you know, we can't lose twice to the Bengals and expect to be there in January. And so they want revenge. They've changed their defense. They are coming hunting for the Bengals. There's no question about that. But the Bengals have a great antidote in Cedric Benson. They really do. And I just like the way the Bengals' offensive line matches up against this Ravens front seven, especially with Haloti Ngata banged up. If he plays, he may not be very effective, and I'm not sure that he's going to play in this game, Colin.
All right. By the way, you are on the cover. Sal Pal is you're like a cover boy on the cover of, I think it's GI Magazine this week. What in the world is that?
It's called GI Jobs. It's published out of Pittsburgh by a lot of former military officers who try to help veterans get back into civilian life. It's a great magazine. It's called GI Jobs. Go on their website, gijobs.com. It's a great, for Veterans Week, it's a great magazine for everybody to check out who is a veteran, who is looking to get back into civilian life, be coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, and you want to get connected up to a job service. Or out there, if you're looking for a job and you just came back, or you know somebody who has, go to their website. Oh, by the way, yes, I am on the cover. They did profile of me, but it's a great magazine that performs a great service. As you know, I'm a Navy veteran, and I wanted to support the magazine and the cause.
All right. Will you be in GI Jobs swimsuit issue? Is there a chance of that?
I don't think we want to see that. No, it's not a good idea.
By the way, 30 seconds left. Are we going to get an upset in the NFL this weekend? Do you sense there's an upset looming on Sunday or Monday somewhere?
Yes, I do sense that there's an upset looming. And I think it's the team that is traveling to Chicago. I think it's the Arizona Cardinals beating the Bears.
Beating the Bears?
Beating the Bears, wow. Yes. They play very well on the road this year. Haven't been able to get it done at home. For some reason, Ken Whisenhunt and Kurt Warner have figured out how to win on the road in that Arizona Cardinals uniform, especially east of the Mississippi. So that's what I see this week.
GIJobs.com. Sal Pal, your pal, my pal, Sal Pal. Thanks, buddy.
You know, I love it. See you.
Whoa!
We do it every day at this time. We call it our daily sports page.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sports.
Spanning the globe, the NFL.
I've never figured out why I love this segment so much. It's my macabre sense of humor or a sense of reality. It's time for our Week 9 injury update. Adam Kaplan, footballinjuries.com. All right, it's the Eagles and the Cowboys. Brian Westbrook, running back for the Eagles, had a concussion. What is the latest with him?
Colin, he looked fine. In fact, ran real well in yesterday's practice. The only things to worry about with concussions are headaches. His last headache was last Saturday. Hasn't had any since then. He's been clear to play. So unless something happens before the game, he'll be in the lineup.
Anquan Boldin, the explosive receiver for Arizona. That's a really interesting game at Chicago. He's had a high ankle sprain. What's up with one of Kurt Warner's favorite targets, Anquan Boldin?
You know, Colin, the last 2 weeks he's not been able to finish either game. He's taken himself out because he's playing on a high ankle sprain. He came back way too early. He knew that. He knew there could be some problems, but definitely some issues. This injury is not going to go away quickly. He's going to try to play. If he has any kind of issues, Steve Breston knew it's been a really good story for the team with Phil in.
Let's go to Denver-Pittsburgh. That is a huge game. Denver coming off a spanking at Baltimore. Ryan Harris, tackle for Denver, has issues downstairs, toe, feet. Probably don't want that against the Steelers. What's the latest?
No, he's expected to miss a couple weeks, and that's a problem because their offensive line struggled. Undrafted free agent out of 2008, Tyler Palumbus replaced him, expected to start. Last week, he got taken advantage of big time by Baltimore. I think that's a major problem going into this matchup with Ryan Harris out.
All right, Cedric Ellis, defensive tackle, Saints against Carolina. What's up?
Yeah, this is bad. You know, he's got a knee problem, actually, and he's going to miss this game. And you saw what Michael Turner did against them. And you know what Carolina's going to do? All they're going to do is run the football. However, they're starting fullback Brad Hoover. He's out, not expected to play with his high ankle sprain. That's a problem. Look for Carolina. Use a lot of two tight end sets in the game.
All right, good stuff. Footballinjuries.com. Check it out. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
Cleveland.
LeBron and the Cavs fall to the Bulls at home. Joining us, Brian Mahoney, Associated Press. The Cavs offense kind of sputtering so far this season. Can we just blame that on the Shaq acquisition and they're kind of just trying to figure this thing all out?
Well, I'm sure that's what they'd like to say. I don't think that's all of it. You know, it's basic basketball. You have to make shots.
and they're shooting the ball terrible from the outside. They just never seem to get anything easy. Watching them last night, you just wonder if there's ever going to be a basket where they don't have to try that hard for, but they play so slow sometimes. They just never have anything where it was a naturally easy possession for them, and they don't have enough good shooters to make up for that.
You know, you get to a point with LeBron, everybody knows he's great. If the Cavs struggle and you get to an all-star break and they're not playing well, is the coach in trouble?
You know, people are going to say that, yes. Now, obviously, LeBron likes Mike Brown, and that'll help a lot. But, you know, there's going to be some panic, sure, if they're not doing what they expect to do. This is a team that won, you know, 66 games last year. If they're nowhere near that pace, yeah, you start somewhere, and that always starts with the coach.
Shaq had 14 and 10 in the loss. Brian, so far, how has he fit into that team?
Well, you know, I think okay. I just think part of the problem is so far Shaquille O'Neal hasn't been much of an upgrade over what, you know, Gauskas has been for years. They throw him the ball early in the game. They try and get him going, but then as the game goes on, they go away from him. And Shaq is averaging less than 10 shots a game. If you have this big guy who's supposed to be this huge acquisition for you, let him, you know, play more. Now, I don't know if that's because he's not enough in shape. I don't know if they don't have enough plays for him yet, but the bottom line is it hasn't been that much different than what they were before.
All right, good stuff. Brian Mahoney, update on the struggling Cavs. Thanks, man.
Okay, you're welcome.
MMA.
Saturday night, CBS. You got a big fight. The Russian, Fyodor Emelianenko, and Brett Rogers, the somewhat unheralded fighter. Frank Shamrock, who's an MMA legend, joining us. What do we know? I mean, this Russian fighter, you kind of mythical. What do we know about this guy?
Well, I mean, truthfully, we know very little. He's really a throwback to the 1980s. He's wearing his, you know, Russian suit. He is the quintessential question of what is this man doing and how does he do it? He's beaten everybody at everything for 10 years. We don't know if it's hype. We don't know what it is, but it happens every time.
Is he, you know, because so much of MMA is L.A. and Vegas-based and domestic. Has he fought anybody, this Russian, that we could compare him to?
Well, he's fought Hongman Choi at 7'3". These guys have fought giants, both of them. When you talk about his opponent, Rogers, this is a guy who's 285 pounds. He moves like a cat. He could be a professional football player, and he punches like a middleweight. That's what Fyodor Emelianenko, the man who's never lost, is going up against on Saturday night.
It's
mind-boggling what could happen.
Yeah, Frank Shamrock, MMA legend, it fights on CBS. In the history of MMA, how big is this fight? How much is it anticipated?
This is the biggest fight to ever happen in mixed martial arts on CBS, and this is the greatest fighter to ever walk in the sport.
Wow. So Brett Rogers, who apparently was working at Sam's Club, got into this sport. Do you give him any shot to win this thing?
Absolutely. He's only been 6 years in this business, but in those 6 years, he has knocked out every single person he has fought. He's amassed a 10-0 record, and the last guy he fought was ranked number 2. He destroyed him in 14 seconds.
Wow. All right, Frank, appreciate the update. CBS this weekend. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
That was Spanning the Globe.
To bring you the constant variety of sports.
The Herd on ESPN Radio.
Whoa!
Here's one for the road.
You think we need one more?
Nah, better make it two.
All right, we'll get one more.
Two for the road in the Herd.
His name is Calvin Hoover. He's 21 years old, and he lives in Salem, Oregon. He called 911 this week to report that somebody stole $400 in cash from him. But Calvin Hoover of Salem also told police somebody stole his pot. Memo to Calvin Hoover. When you call 911 and you report that someone stole your weed, they're going to arrest you for owning weed.
You think it was Tim Lincecum who robbed him?
A woman is going to give birth online. You can watch the whole thing for free if you're into it. Sometime in the next few days, 23-year-old Minnesota girl named Lindsay is going to give birth live online. The website is called momslikeme.com. It's free to watch. Website users can chat with Lindsay via instant message. The irony here is Lindsay only wants to give her first name for privacy reasons. She's giving birth online. Okay, then.
Not a pretty thing to watch, brother.
Two for the road.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. For more of the best that ESPN Radio has to offer, tune in from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern for The Herd with Colin Cowherd on ESPN Radio and online at ESPNRadio.com.